Good evening, folks, and welcome back once again. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and when it comes time to take a look back at a week like this one, as we wrap up the first full week in December 2017, the only thing I can say is, wow. What a week it's been. All kinds of news from literally all over the world. Some of it was, in fact, hyped by the Waystream, usually for the wrong reasons. Others completely ignored, but we're getting used to that. And it leads your host to the usual questions as we start to try to wrap up a week like this one. Where do we begin? I will continue to suggest that the most important set of stories, and they just keep expanding, has to do with the complete and utter destruction of the rule of law in America, and the literal war that the deep state is conducting to try to conclude that process. That we've known about for quite a while, but the fact that it's finally coming out. Now, the Waystream still would prefer to ignore it, and they have smokescreens galore to continue their distraction from it. But the really interesting news still is that the American people are onto them. And there is so much of that story that I think is vitally important to explore in a bit more detail, but I'm going to come back to that in the second segment tonight. So let's start with the news that the Waystream is at least touching on, and indeed, a lot of it is even good news, one way or another. Let's start off here in more or less chronological order, especially since one of the big topics this week has to do with the farce that the so-called judicial system in America with a K has become. Somehow terms like mockery of justice, judicial farce, or even banana republic no longer do what's happened in the United States justice. And since I've got no shortage of stories to make that point, let's start with the one bright spot this week, a bit of good news that proves, yes, even a blind pig occasionally finds a truffle. Or for those that don't know what a truffle is and work for the Department of Justice, we can call it an acorn. AP has reported that the United States Supreme Court on Monday allowed, isn't that nice of them, the Trump administration to actually follow the law and fully enforce a ban on travel to the United States by residents of those six, mostly Muslim countries, that have been coming across the open border and setting up their sanctuary city secret cells unhindered for so many months. And even though this was pretty much a slam-dunk decision, at least it was 7-2, but that shows there are still two far-left so-called justices, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor, that can't be bothered to read the law as written. This, by the way, says the AP, is not a final ruling on the travel ban anyway. Challenges to the policy are winding through the federal courts. You know what's funny, folks? If this was a court ruling on, say, oh, I don't know, licensed so-called gay marriage, or the continued rape of your right to keep and bear arms, or, for crying out loud, yet another excuse for unlawful search and seizure, so-called lower courts would already be saying, it's a done deal, nothing you can do about it. Can you spot the difference here? Challenges, though, it says, to the policy are still winding through the federal courts, and the justices themselves are ultimately expected to rule on its legality. But the action indicates that the high court might even be able to find that truffle and eventually approve the latest version of the ban announced by President Donald Trump in September, even though lower courts have continued to make up whatever excuses they can to find problems with the policy. All the rulings by the lower court so far have been on what they call a preliminary basis, just allowing the continued importation of terrorists for the time being. The San Francisco-based infamous Ninth Circus, appropriately the scene of the most infamous recent sanctuary city murder, and the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, will be holding arguments on the legality of the ban this week, and both are expected to deal with the issue on an accelerated basis, now that the Supreme Court says it expects them to reach decisions with, quote, appropriate dispatch, unquote. Well, real soon now anyway, and of course it's harder to come up with excuses for not obeying the law than the other way around. We'll follow that up with a story for which headlines actually did appear all around the world, although with the usual and expected slant. And of course, that has to do with the fact that after decades of posturing and being double-minded about it, President Donald Trump announced on Wednesday that finally the United States would do what a law has said it was supposed to do since 1995, and eventually at least move the United States Embassy to Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the actual capital of that nation. As is actually the case, who could have thought it, for most embassies that the United States has in capitals all around the world. Here next, a little bit at least of what the president had to say about why he was doing what he had said he would do all along.
When I came into office, I promised to look at the world's challenges with open eyes and very fresh thinking. We cannot solve our problems by making the same failed assumptions and repeating the same failed strategies of the past. Old challenges demand new approaches. My announcement today marks the beginning of a new approach to conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. In 1995, Congress adopted the Jerusalem Embassy Act, urging the federal government to relocate the American embassy to Jerusalem and to recognize that that city, and so importantly, is Israel's capital. This act passed Congress by an overwhelming bipartisan majority and was reaffirmed by unanimous vote of the Senate only 6 months ago. Yet for over 20 years, every previous American president has exercised the law's waiver, refusing to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem or to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital city. Presidents issued these waivers under the belief that delaying the recognition of Jerusalem would advance the cause of peace. Some say they lacked courage, but they made their best judgment based on facts as they understood them at the time. Nevertheless, the record is in. After more than two decades of waivers, we are no closer to a lasting peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. It would be folly to assume that repeating the exact same formula would now produce a different or better result. Therefore, I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I am delivering. I've judged this course of action to be in the best interests of the United States of America and the pursuit of peace between Israel and the Palestinians.
And along with this, the United States is preparing to commence thinking about beginning the process of moving the embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. And if you know anything about how government works, folks, that'll take quite a while, especially since we're talking about an embassy building with lots of security issues. In the lead-up to all this, there have been no shortage of warnings, threats even, from all the usual suspects saying, if Trump dares to do this, the Middle East will be engulfed in war and turmoil and terror. And as Trump correctly pointed out, explain to me why that's different than the last few decades. It's not like failing to do what at least officially has been American policy for 22 years now has accomplished the alleged goal of lasting peace. So maybe he's right. Doing what we've said we were going to do for so long might actually demonstrate real change for a change. In any event, the political fallout is obvious and as expected. Here's one of many summaries from the Daily Mail out of the UK. Violent protests, it says, have broken out in the West Bank today after U.S. President Donald Trump enraged the Middle East by recognizing Jerusalem, in fact, as it already is, as Israel's capital. Palestinians torched debris, hurled rocks toward Israeli troops who fired tear gas and water cannons to disperse a demonstration in Bethlehem. There are growing fears of fresh bloodshed in the region, and Islamist groups said the president had, quote, opened the gates to hell with his flagrant aggression, while a pro-Hezbollah newspaper in Lebanon declared death to America on a front page showing a burning U.S. flag. And all I can say is, gee, folks, what else is new? All of this, says the paper, came after Trump sparked fury with his White House announcement yesterday, which changed decades of American policy. Well, no, I guess by that they must mean change what they actually do as opposed to what they say. And sparked warnings from Hamas about a new intifada or uprising against Israel. Yeah, you know, another one. Islamic Turkey is fit to be tied, and with allies like that, we have to wonder why we're worried so much about the Ruskies. Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said America had pulled the pin on a bomb ready to blow in the region, while Turkish President Erdogan accused Trump of throwing the Middle East into, quote, a ring of fire, unquote, which he seems to be more than happy to throw as much gasoline on as he possibly can. The U.S. State Department has issued another worldwide caution to Americans traveling overseas. All I can add to that is, if Americans aren't already cautious, folks, you'd have to wonder what kind of Kool-Aid they've been drinking and which fake news they've been watching. Perhaps the most revealing piece on all of this coverage, though, also came from the Daily Mail, and it demonstrates the real political battle at hand here. The headline from this companion piece says, "Why is Jerusalem important? What makes Donald Trump's intervention so toxic? And does anyone else recognize the city as Israel's capital? All you need to know," they trumpet, "about why Trump's announcement is so incendiary." Yes, they start with a bit of history. What is the status of Israel and then Jerusalem? It was set up, as most of you know, by the United Nations on the basis of a British pledge known as the Balfour Declaration in 1948. Much of Jerusalem and other areas were captured in 1967 following the Arab attack in what's called the Six-Day War, although they phrase it a bit differently and more politically correctly. However, it says in the Daily Mail, Palestinians want East Jerusalem as their capital, and most countries, including Britain, do not recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and instead they keep their embassies in Tel Aviv. This piece makes that out to be a big deal, but at least their other story does quote Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said Trump had bound himself forever to the history of Jerusalem with the announcement, and noted that other states are now considering following the U.S. lead. Which does make a certain amount of sense, if only for practical reasons, because, as the president pointed out in his speech, all of the Israeli government offices, from the prime minister's residence to the Knesset to their Supreme Court to just about every government agency, is located in their capital of Jerusalem. Well, the Daily Mail continues, Jerusalem is important to just about everybody, chiefly because of its religious history. Quote, the Temple Mount in the Old City is the most sacred place in Judaism, site of Solomon's Temple, said to have housed the Ark of the Covenant and destroyed in 586 B.C. by the King of Babylon, unquote. It's also sacred to Christians for obvious reasons, and it's claimed to be the third holiest shrine in Islam, because that's where the Prophet Muhammad's night journey allegedly ended in his ascension to heaven. Many, though, they say, now fear that America, having jumped to a conclusion on the city's status now, will undermine the chances of a peace deal, and we've already addressed that issue, and could damage America's position as a so-called honest broker between the two sides. What, you mean more than the predecessor of this guy did? When it comes to the term honest broker, I can't think of a less likely way to describe Imam Barack Hussein Obama. Anyway, folks, here's where the rubber meets the road in this particularly slanted bit of propaganda. How does Trump justify moving the U.S. embassy, they ask, because it's currently in Tel Aviv, and to move it to Jerusalem would be a powerfully symbolic and inflammatory gesture in support of Israel and in defiance of Palestinians. Now listen to this and see if it doesn't kind of ring a bit hollow. But, they say, technically, Trump has a legal framework. Say what? Another way to put it would be, technically, Trump is actually following the law, and I guess that would be too shocking for most Brits to actually wrap their heads around. And for around 8 years or so leading up to this guy, Americans never actually saw it happen. Yeah, let's try that again, just because it's a little bit over the top. But, they say, technically, Trump has a legal framework. In 1995, amid lobbying from pro-Israel Americans, the Republican-controlled Congress passed a law, the Jerusalem Embassy Act, which instructs the president to move the embassy. But all presidents since Bill Clinton have signed a waiver every 6 months to prevent that from happening. Obama and now his FBI holdover seem to have signed a lot of papers over the years preventing all kinds of things demanded by law from actually happening. And, of course, exempting themselves from things like warrants, which were supposed to have happened, but nobody pays any attention to anymore. Maybe the real reason there's so much worldwide concern about Trump's latest action is because it indicates, oh, for crying out loud, the United States might not actually be quite so double-minded looking forward. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Did you catch that line about, amid lobbying from pro-Israel Americans and a Republican-controlled Congress? Can you think of a single bill, especially one that has a really bogus, inflammatory name, like Patriot Act or Safe Act or the Saving Widow Puppies from Wanton Destruction by Evil Republicans Act, that hasn't been heavily lobbied for by a whole bunch of highly paid political hacks, aka lobbyists and former insiders in Big Brother's deep state? And ultimately wasn't signed into law by whatever party dominated the Congress when it was done? Give me a break. They don't say, amid lobbying from insurance companies and proponents of socialized medicine, a heavily democratically controlled Congress passed a bill called Obamacare, which has been an abomination ever since. Nor do they make similar claims about just about any of the other abominations to the Constitution, for example, that have been passed over the last couple of decades. In other words, they're ignoring business as usual in Washington and the way things have been done for as long as anybody alive can probably remember, and instead focusing on the fact that, the real issue here may be that something truly could have changed. Now, whether that's actually true or not, folks, I'm not sure yet. The jury is certainly still out. There are major battles against the deep state still to be fought. And to be honest, it's not clear exactly which side the deep state is on when it comes to this one. If they really do manage to kick off a larger conflagration, that certainly suits some of their purposes. But in the meanwhile, it's certainly interesting to see how many people around the world are, again, squealing like stuck pigs. And of course, there's always the smokescreen to consider, too. Both the bogus Russia investigation and the arguably short-circuited Hitlery treason investigation are all off the front pages for today, although the latter, of course, never was on most of the pages of most of the fake news at all. So I guess we go next to the what goes around comes around department, although it seems to come around in a whole different fashion based on the spin than one might have expected or hoped. The big election in Alabama for Senate is coming up next week. Will the people of Alabama see through the attempted tarring and feathering and send former Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore to the Senate with the kind of landslide that'll make it difficult for the deep state to do what they're so desperate to do, and that is destroy anybody that even remotely looks like they've ever read the Constitution or the Bible? I guess we'll see, and it won't be long now, although you know darn well that the deep state, since Plan A and Plan B have failed, already has Plans C, D, and if necessary, E on tap to make sure that whatever happens, more constitutional integrity doesn't break out in the Senate chambers. I mean, really, if their intent is to destroy Trump and if necessary impeach or use the 25th Amendment or whatever it takes to get rid of him, that's the last thing the deep state wants to allow. Meanwhile, a couple more sacrificial lambs were tossed up on the satanic altar this week. First, Michigan Democrat John Conyers, one of the longest, I won't say longest serving, because that's not what he was there for. Maybe longest infecting is another way to put it. Truly one of the most reprehensible, de tutte reprehensible on the House side, and that's saying a lot. Well, anyway, he didn't resign, although he should have. Instead, he retired. Ironically, a lot of his victims who've come forward, the seventh or so was the straw that broke the camel's back and the biblical number of completion, it might seem, having been told by senior Conyers staffers that he was untouchable, but they sure weren't. Well, maybe they've seen a bit of justice, finally, even though it was a long time coming. Good riddance. And then come midweek, we had this welcome bit of good news. Creepy Al Franken, one of the biggest, but certainly there are plenty of others in the competition, hypocrites in the Senate, has announced his resignation. Yeah, good riddance. And true to form, he's still playing the comedian, saying, quote, some of the allegations against me are simply not true. Others, I remember differently. Unquote. Yeah, and others have been documented all over the web with some pretty disgusting pictures, which makes them really hard to deny, doesn't it? But as we've seen, folks, when it comes to the big lie, that's how they play the game. And since there are so many more, and this is a really important smokescreen to get set up for reasons that we'll continue to talk about, I have no doubt, it's why your host contends that what's really going on here is just the sacrifice of a few expendable scapegoats. The real battles are still mostly behind the scenes. So let's talk in the same vein about one of the bigger bits of hypocrisy for this week, and as you know, that's saying quite a bit. Time magazine announced its Person of the Year, and that particular lie has now come so far that it's no longer a person or a group or even a corporation. At least you could make the claim that a corporation is kind of a legal person. It's a mere hashtag. And most disgusting of all, it's not even an honest hashtag. Me Too is the hashtag that's been named Person of the Year. Their cover story says, the silence breakers, the voices that launched a movement. Except, of course, the real voices that really had the courage to launch that movement are being ignored. In a tweet on Thursday night, Juanita Broderick, remember her? One of the many women that a former president, rightfully and evidently with significant amounts of evidence, was accused of raping, came out and revealed the time hypocrisy. She suffered a lot more than those Hollywood actresses who, in many cases, reached fame and fortune for laying on their back for Harvey Weinstein for a little while, or many, many others before him and the casting couch legend that literally goes back decades, or tolerating him in a bathrobe and keeping their mouth shut. There were evidently lots and lots of those. And remember, folks, as others have pointed out, most of them were aware when they went up to the guy's hotel room alone and he met them in the door wearing a bathrobe exactly what was coming next. As at least one pundit has said this week, who are we kidding? It does take two to tango, and there are a whole lot of women who profited, regardless of whether later, sometimes years later, they finally decided they felt abused or not. Well, there were women who didn't profit, and who suffered, and who time ignored. And that's the real issue here when it comes to hypocrisy. In a tweet on Thursday night, Juanita Broderick said she had been approached by Time for an interview, but discovered they didn't actually use anything she said in their story. She wondered if it had anything to do with her not being a really liberal victim. Quote, Time magazine asked to interview me, re the Me Too movement. The comments I gave were deemed of no value. I'd like to know why. Could it be I didn't fit in their liberal victim mold? Says Truth Revolt via InfoWars, Prison Planet, and others. It does seem strange that Broderick's comments were excluded from the piece given her prominence in U.S. political history, outing a sitting president as a sexual predator. At the time, though, Broderick didn't have the luxury of social media hashtags to spread her message and garner support, but she was Me Too before the pound sign had left the push-button telephone. At least decades later, Time has kinda sorta implicated the former president, rightfully known as Slick Willie by those that don't work for the Waystream Press. Better late than never. And for the most part, the Waystream would just as soon continue to ignore Corey Feldman because, you know, gay sexual predation simply can't be discussed without the risk of being called a homophobe. This week it came out that, no, Corey Feldman wasn't lying after all. He did give the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office in 1993, during their investigation, the names of the predators that he's been accused of not telling for so long. The Sheriff's Office denied they had any records of Feldman revealing any such thing up until, oops, this week, supposedly, an audio recording has now been found from that interview almost a quarter of a century ago regarding a Michael Jackson investigation, and he was telling the truth all along. Among the several morals of the story, if you're dealing with cops, especially in a politically correct-to-the-max environment, keep your own copies of the recordings. Right, General Flynn? Here's a story that kind of goes in a whole different direction unless you realize that the point of the smokescreen is to cover up the fact that the economy is going in a whole different direction. Ultimately, a giant reset, since no fully fiat currency in history has ever survived long term, and the almighty American dollar won't be the first. Maybe the Bitcoin bubble, the digital tulip bulb of 2017, is giving us some insight in that regard this week. And so, of course, does this piece from Bloomberg Business. Trump's latest pick for the Federal Reserve is no fan of paper money, it says. Economist Martin Goodfriend doesn't like those little pieces of paper in your wallet, formerly known as Federal Reserve notes. And this is important because Trump has nominated him to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve for a 14-year term. And he may use this as an opportunity, they say, to pursue his academic interest in abolishing paper money. Which would, after all, certainly make it a lot easier to implement negative interest rate policy. Not to mention other things the scriptures warned us about for a couple millennia now. And Goodfriend has made no secret of his desire to, as he puts it, unencumber interest rate policy at the zero bound. The Mises Institute, one of the leaders in the Austrian School of Economics, recently wrote, "Is Marvin Goodfriend the worst Fed nominee of all time?" noting that, quote, given his radical views on monetary policy, it's not hyperbole to suggest that Goodfriend's nomination, which has now happened, would represent a genuine danger to the economic well-being of every American. Well, certainly those outside of the financial services industry. At least in a kind of backhanded way, the fact that he's even been nominated is more enlightening than the stuff we get every week from the bureaus of lying statistics.
Over the brain, you better wake up before it's too late. Get ready to rumble, put all the God's armor on. We're killing our babies before they're born. Stand up and be kind and come and sound the alarm. Aren't you one of God's children, but nothing but the devil's
back now to the second segment of tonight's show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And how better to start things off than a bit of Obamapocracy? Because I want to spend some time this segment talking about the continued destruction of the rule of law and how at least, if nothing else, Americans, those that are paying attention, are beginning to wake up to it. Hence, the most recent traitorous poster child that the ancient Roman Cicero once described as the real threat, the traitor within your gates. In what has been called an unhinged rant that was largely ignored by the waystream fake news media, the president in exile, by whatever alias you may remember him, addressed what he called nativist mistrust and unease, perhaps for very good reason, because of people like him who've undermined the rule of law, and actually had the chutzpah to compare Trump, rather than himself and Hitlery, to Adolf Hitler. Evidently, he's ignoring gun bans, fascist economics, and the security Stasi police state, for the obvious reasons. And Paul Joseph Watson connected the dots and made the interesting observation that Obama implied either Americans vote Democrat or millions of people would be killed. As for your host, I can't help but think that, kind of like Adolf, he's telegraphing his move, because he's been working on that really hard for quite a while. Make of that what you will, if it's not already obvious. And if it's not already obvious, or even if it is, and you want to be able to talk to others about it, we saw a whole lot more evidence of all of that this past week. On next to the attempted coup to overturn an election. No, of course it's not by the dreaded Ruskies, unless you count those that are on the take in Washington, D.C., or giving them uranium on a tarmac somewhere and covering that up, but then they get to be a special counsel. And this, too, we've got to do in chronological order, more or less, because there's just so much skullduggery and scumbaggery here to keep track of. And we do have to back up a ways to set the stage properly for this week. Once upon a time, one of the most crooked politicians and scamsters in U.S. history, a literal mob boss, committed all kinds of crimes, including undermining national security, amounting literally to treason, then covered it up, and then was given a pass by the colluding criminals at the faux Bureau of Investigation. Yeah, you already knew all of that, but it's still the only way to make sense of all the criminality, corruption, and collusion. Monday brought us more on the continuing Flynn persecution and smokescreen. As the week progressed, and this will no doubt continue, we keep finding out more and more just how disingenuous this particular distraction is. Having caused chaos in financial markets briefly, says the summary out of Zero Hedge, and set the liberal waystream media on fire with their I told you so's, last weekend was downright sickening, folks, and sparked a renewed round of impeached Trump demands, ABC News finally issued first a clarification, then as close as they'll ever get, to an apology for fake news, negating the entire story that they had told about how Michael Flynn supposedly was prepared to testify that Donald Trump ordered him to make contact with the dreaded Ruskies before he was president-elect, which turns out to be another whoppo. Because the timing really does matter. Having done it before the election was finalized would have been a crime. Doing it during the transition is standard operating procedure. Other so-called news agencies who were quick to hop on the original story were less diligent when it came to the so-called clarification. No real surprises there, of course. Brian Ross, so-called journalist and ABC News chief investigative sick correspondent who wrote the ABC article, did finally get a slap on the wrist. Nothing like what Michael Flynn is getting, if you think about it, for what amounts to actually a far smaller misremembering of facts. As the week progressed, one thing became clear. Flynn is being made an example of. Nothing he said or did with the Russian ambassador was even remotely illegal, much less unexpected for a new administration trying to repair relations with one of the world's primary superpowers. And as so many people this week have pointed out, if there had been a smoking gun there, for crying out loud, you'd have heard about it. Because look how much you heard from ABC about a gun that wasn't even there, much less smoking. And instead, what you got was this bit of incredible, yes, we're really not kidding, in-your-face hypocrisy. The trouble is, Flynn lied to the FBI. Why, who does he think he is? Hillary Clinton? And besides which, who was doing the interview? Ah, that's where the plot thickened the rest of the week. But first, back to the chronology, this summary that I saw from Benny Johnson via Zero Hedge coming out of that smoke-filled weekend of all the confusion and obfuscation out of ABC News. He summarized it this way. Original reporting, proof of Russian collusion, treason, and the intent to rig election. Correction. Commonplace, completely legal diplomatic relationship established by an incoming administration. Is it any wonder, asked Tyler Durden, a bit cynically but correctly, why trust in the waste stream media is at rock bottom? But wait, that was just Monday, remember? Here next, the other arguably far more important story that was covered up, indeed for quite a while as it turns out, while all the attention was on the faux pas of the always believe Clinton news media. While it's no surprise, at least it's consistent, we find out that there are other FBI agents that are vehemently anti-Trump and corrupt to the core. It wasn't just the whoremeister in charge of the whorehouse, in other words, and that shouldn't surprise anyone. The Mueller-Russia probe was tainted by the same person that led the Clinton so-called probe, or matter, anything but an investigation. Said Donald Trump in a tweet concerning a finally released report, anti-Trump FBI agent led Clinton email probe. Now he says it all starts to make sense. Here then, another installment of the continuing saga of Fox's investigating the hen house, courtesy of All News Pipeline, Fox News, and others. It's well known that much of Team Robert Mueller, this so-called special counsel, consists of Hillary Clinton and Obama donors, but according to news reports, one of the team that was reassigned to HR after it was discovered how crooked he was via text messages to another employee that it turns out he was having an extramarital affair with, had a, and this is a clever term, anti-Trump bias. In fact, Mueller was made aware of it, then reassigned the agent, but was not forthcoming enough as to the reason the agent was reassigned and evidently deliberately kept Congress in the dark about it. And as the week progressed, folks, turned out that wasn't even the half of it. The special counsel, Robert S. Mueller III, removed the top FBI agent from his investigation, said Fox, into alleged Russian election meddling after the Department of Just Us Inspector General began examining whether that agent had, in fact, sent text messages that expressed anti-Trump political views, according to three people briefed on the matter. The former top FBI official assigned to Special Counsel Robert S. Mueller's so-called probe of Russian interference in the 2016 election was taken off that job, are you ready for this, over the summer. Funny, isn't it, how ABC and CNN weren't so hot to report on that with quite the same zeal after his bosses discovered, surprise, 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 that he and another member of Team Mueller had exchanged politically charged texts, as well as swapping spit and other bodily fluids, it turns out, disparaging President Trump while supporting Hillary Clinton. The Office of the Inspector General is now investigating. And you gotta hope it's gonna be a better investigation than we've seen from the FBI all over the place up until now. Peter Sturza, who played a key role in the FBI matter, masquerading as an investigation over the use of a private email server, and he actually participated in the so-called interview by the FBI with Clinton herself, although, of course, conveniently, it was not under oath, and therefore, unlike other people who aren't above the law, right, Michael Flynn? She doesn't have to worry about being accused of lying to the FBI or anybody else, under oath or not. All of this happened just days before Comey's public statement refusing to recommend prosecution of Herr Hitlery. And before the week was out, we learned, surprise, surprise, again, that it went far deeper than that. This same scumbag was the one who rewrote the infamous Comey memo to get rid of the words grossly negligent and replace them with something a lot less indictable, and he was knee-deep in the Flynn tarring and feathering to boot. And guess what? Even more surprise, 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 as the week wore on, just about everybody else on Team Mueller is almost as equally tainted, whether it's having represented the Bill and Hill Clinton Foundation, or given lots and lots of money, or just participating in various cover-ups over the years. House investigators told Fox News, says their coverage, that they have long regarded Sturzik as a key figure in the chain of events when the Bureau in 2016 received the infamous anti-Trump dossier and launched a counterintelligence investigation into so-called Russian meddling in the election that ultimately came to encompass FISA surveillance. And who gives a blankety-blank what the Fourth Amendment has to say, even if you're president-elect, of at least one Trump campaign associate? As a result of all of this, at long last, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes is prepared to put forward articles of contempt against the FBI. Gee, do you think? Because it appears that that information and a whole bunch of other stuff has been deliberately hidden from congressional investigations to prevent them from learning that Mueller's entire probe, the Clinton email server investigation, SIC, and any other election-related investigations by Sturzok or other whoremeisters within the FBI have been compromised and tainted, not only because of that particular scumbag, but because all of the evidence now being used by Mueller originated from surveillance that, if it was anybody else, would have been called fruit of the poisonous tree. And the hits just keep on coming. On Friday, it came out that the Obama-appointed judge, who is dealing with the Michael Flynn situation, and also happened to have sat on the FISA court and issued the bogus warrant for Team Trump while they were under surveillance by the Obama regime, has, without explanation, who could have thought it, mysteriously recused himself from that case. Wonder what he doesn't want to come out. Let me tell you something, folks. Just reporting on all of this makes me want to take a shower. And I do have to say this again. My continued referral to the FBI leadership, including Comey and Mueller and Sturzok and who knows how many others, as whoremeisters, leading a bunch of whores, admittedly, is pretty rough on honest purveyors of the oldest profession. All News Pipeline again makes one more very cogent observation about how coincidental it seems that ABC News is handed a story, given the extreme media Trump derangement syndrome, as they call it. Basically, anything that's anti-Trump is intended to get the top headlines and go viral, all of which pretty much guaranteed that their so-called story would be immediately reported without going through their vetting editorial process. And the subsequent clarification, correction, and further corrections upon corrections would end up sucking so much air out of the room that the real blockbuster story about a member of the deep state who played key roles in all of the biggest scandals of 2016 and the real election manipulation, the dossier, the email server, Russian collusion, Uranium One, meddling investigations, you name it, and it's tainted almost every single aspect of Mueller's so-called investigation that's happening right now, has been largely and continues to be largely ignored. Don't forget, folks, this guy was sent out to pasture months ago, and it didn't even come out until now. And again, since then, as we've known all along, it turns out he was knee-deep in the nest with other birds of a feather. And while the media ignores conflict of interest that might have made Al Capone blush, at least Trump is tweeting about it. This weekend, says a summary of all of them from Zero Hedge, may set a new record for the number of Trump tweets and retweets. And arguably, if he hadn't been talking about the FBI criminality here, the way stream might have completely ignored it. Over the weekend, Trump went on a veritable tweet rampage, launching another attack on crooked Hitlery and the Department of Just Us over her mishandling of emails, writing, quote, "So General Flynn lies to the FBI and his life is destroyed, while crooked Hitlery Clinton, on that now famous FBI holiday interrogation, with no swearing in and no recording, lies many times, and nothing happens to her. Rigged system, he asks, or just a double standard?" Whereupon he continued, saying, many people in our country are asking what the Justice, and he put it in quotes, Department is doing about the fact that totally crooked Hitlery, and he keeps spelling it wrong, but I'll get it right for you, after receiving a subpoena from the United States Congress, deleted and acid-washed 33,000 emails. No justice, unquote. Trump was back Sunday morning and angrier than ever when he discovered the story about the tainted whore FBI agent Peter Sturzak, who was said to have been removed from the Mueller probe, even though it was kept under wraps for a long time, which led Trump to retweet IBD's Paul Sperry, who recapped the situation this way. Breaking, FBI top investigator for Mueller, Peter Sturzak, busted, sending political text messages bashing Trump and praising Hitlery during 2016 campaign. Sturzak actually led the Hitler email probe and recommended clearing her, whereupon he was tapped to supervise the Trump-Russia probe. Ray, it says, needs to clean house. Because now we know the politicization is even worse than McCabe's ties to McAuliffe and Clinton. It also infected his top investigator, Peter Sturzak, who sent those texts bashing Trump, praising Hitler during the campaign, and he's the guy that led the bogus Hitler probe and supervised the witch hunt for Trump. Whereupon Trump followed that up with one I've already mentioned. Report, anti-Trump FBI agent led Clinton email probe, and now it all starts to make sense. Tainted, he says? No, very dishonest. FBI agent's role in Clinton probe is under review. This is the guy that led the Clinton email probe, and he quotes Fox and Friends, noting the Clinton money is going to the wife of another FBI agent in charge. Ultimately, Trump slammed both the agency and its former whoremeister head, saying, after years of Comey with the phony and dishonest Clinton investigation and more running the FBI, its reputation is in tatters, the worst in history. And we're still just talking about the first part of the week. Former United Nations Ambassador John Bolton has called it what it is, along with the Wall Street Journal, the first attempted coup d'etat in U.S. history. And here I'm referring to the appearance he made on the Lou Dobbs show on Fox News.
The Wall Street Financial Journal said this is the first attempted coup d'etat in American history. I mean, it's
stupid.
A mini coup d'etat, but it goes right along with the idea that they should have won the election.
The transfer of power is not minor.
Yeah, and one recalls the famous scene in the debate where I think it was Chris Wallace asked both candidates, if you lose, will you accept the result?
Don't tell me. Did Hillary lie?
Actually, none of the above. In fact, the question was only asked to Donald Trump. Hitler was not asked the same question because the answer is now obvious. The fix was in. She never intended to accept the results of the election because they already knew it was supposed to come out the other way. And Team Hitlery, as it's increasingly made clear, are continuing to do their dirty deeds. Days is another piece, this one from Zero Hedge, after it emerged that former special counsel investigator Peter Sturzak was fired, quietly, from Robert Mueller's so-called Russia probe in August. Sarah Carter of Circa told a Fox News panel that there are still more anti-Trump messages sent by Mueller's anti-Trump team floating around. And by the time the week was out, she'd been proven correct. And just in case we've forgotten, folks, Zero Hedge kindly included a list of the Team Obama, Hitlery, Deep State, et al. Connections among the so-called investigative team assembled by the whoremeister Mueller. Andrew Weissman, who is a Barack Obama Democrat campaign donor and, according to federal records, led the so-called Enron investigation, gave a lot of money to all kinds of the usual suspects. Andrew Goldstein, who Fox said had been a major contributor to previous Obama campaigns. Jeannie Rhee was not only a major Clinton and Obama donor, like most of the rest of them, she also represented the Clinton Foundation while a partner at the WilmerHale Law Firm. Greg Andres, James Quarles, Elizabeth Prilogar, Brandon Van Grack, Rush Atkinson, and Kyle Feeney have also given lots of money to people who they wish had won the election instead of the guy they're trying to undermine and are doing their best to make sure get it eventually anyway. And here's the key point in all of this, folks. Yes, these are just campaign contributions. These are just a whole bunch of people who don't like the way the election turned out. And the real question is, do we have even a hint of impropriety here? No, folks. This is hardly, by any definition, the appearance of impropriety. By any realistic historic definition, this is the appearance that the fix is in. Back when we were a nation of law rather than of men, what we've got here is enough impropriety to make this whole thing literally nothing more than a joke. And that's the issue. Yes, still more skullduggery as the week progressed. Even CNN has now apparently discovered that not only did that scumbag have a leading role in deep-sixing the so-called investigation, later, of course, we know it was termed a mere matter, but he may have single-handedly saved Hillary from prosecution by making the now infamous change in Comey's final statement to describe her email abuses as, no, not grossly negligent, which would have been felonious conduct, even by the FBI's own double standards, might have still ended up with her in an orange jumpsuit. You see, folks, unlike Michael Flynn, who deserves what he's getting, Hitlery was just very, very naughty, and perhaps a bit stupid, too, but that's not a crime. And now it would seem even the Wall Street Journal and their editorial board has finally been able to figure it out. This came out overnight into Tuesday. The special counsel is stonewalling Congress and protecting the FBI. Gee, do you think? Donald Trump, they begin, is his own worst enemy, as many ill-advised tweets over the weekend about Michael Flynn, the FBI, and Robert Mueller's Russia probe demonstrate. Well, folks, if he hadn't been talking about it, the waste stream sure as hell wouldn't have. But, they continue, that doesn't mean that Mr. Mueller and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, SICK, deserve a pass about their motives and methods, as new information raises troubling questions. And then they go on to tell us about what we already know. Yes, Peter Sturzik is a scumbag, and he's been demoted after it came out that, yes, he really is the kind of scumbag that's been covering up treason and other high crimes and misdemeanors. Let's cut to the chase here. The news, they say, about Mr. Sturzik leaked only when the Department of Justice concluded it couldn't hold out any longer, and the stories were full of spin that praised Mr. Mueller for acting swiftly. Are you believing this? To remove the agent. And only after these stories ran did Justice agree on Saturday to make Mr. Sturzik available to the House. All of this, they say, is the more notable because Mr. Sturzik was the chief lieutenant to former FBI director, and here your host inserts the appropriate term, Whoremeister, James Comey, and he played a lead role investigating, SICK, alleged coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia during the 2016 election. All right, more background on how it is that Mueller should never have been allowed to be anywhere close to a so-called investigation. Anyway, you look up conflict of interest in a law dictionary, you see his picture. Mr. Mueller's media protectorate, they finally get around to saying, argues that anyone critical of the special counsel is trying to cover for Mr. Trump, but the alleged Trump-Russia ties are the subject of numerous probes. Mr. Mueller's and those of various committees in the House and Senate, if there's any evidence of collusion, and so far, folks, they haven't found any, Democrats and Mr. Mueller's agents will make sure it is spread far and wide, and that, of course, proves the point I just made. Yet, says the Wall Street Journal, none of this means the public shouldn't know also if and how America's most powerful law enforcement, SICK, agency was influenced by Russian or partisan U.S. actors. And nowhere in here, folks, do they even mention Mr. Mueller's tainted connections to Uranium One. All the more so given Mr. Comey's extraordinary intervention in the 2016 campaign, and of course they add, the history of the FBI is hardly without taint. Deputy Attorney General, the infamous and also well-compromised Rod Rosenstein, who appointed Mr. Mueller, is also playing, as the Journal puts it, an increasingly questionable role in resisting congressional oversight. In other words, he too is stonewalling the truth and lying about everything that has to do with anything associated with the deep state war on the new administration. Justice, it says, has floated multiple reasons for ignoring House subpoenas, none of them persuasive. The Journal points out that Congress is finally getting a wee bit upset about having been repeatedly lied to. They use terms like contempt of Congress, but that didn't seem to bother Eric Holder, Mr. Fast and Furious, very much now, did it? The latest credible news, though, concludes the Wall Street Journal editorial board, supports our view that Mr. Mueller is too conflicted to investigate the FBI, do you think, and should step down in favor of someone more credible. To which all your hosts can add is, hey, with the possible exception of Hitlery herself, can you think of anyone less credible? And before we move on from criminals in high places at the fraudulent bunglers of instigation, this is worth noting, courtesy of the Daily Caller and Prison Planet and anybody else that sees the hypocrisy here. Remember the two Clinton associates, Cheryl Mills and Huma Abedin, who also lied to the FBI, among other more serious crimes, and probably bleach-bitted some files, hit a few disk drives with hammers, and otherwise got away with things that lesser lights, like General Michael Flynn, are being thrown to the wolves for? Turns out neither of them, of course, faced legal consequences for their misleading statements. And guess who it was that they were interviewed by? Yes, they were lucky. It was none other than former FBI Section Chief Peter Sturzik. It would seem you can lie to some FBI agents with impunity if, of course, you're a liar that's on the same team. Hopefully by now the point I'm trying to make this week is clear. There really is a war, folks. It's the deep state versus the rule of law, and it's very serious, and they're playing for keeps. It's a battle to the death, and the rest of us had better wake up to it and realize it's also about which God we serve. And if you're not sure about that, they're going to try to feed you the wrong answer. Check out Joshua 24:15 for the right one.